The blue sky opens out further and farther. The daily sense of failure goes away. The damage I have done to myself fades. A million suns come forward with light when I sit firmly in that world. So, welcome back. This is a little time to stretch, and you can use the chat to connect with others here with us today. Say what the weather is like, where you are, or say a word or two about how you're feeling, what's going on with you. Just a time to connect a little bit and transition from the meditation to the talk. So I'll see if anybody is writing anything in the chat and share it. Christy had to let her dog out when he heard the bell. And Judith says it's sunny in Bellingham. And Jennifer, grateful in Nevada, cold and windy. Oh, I used to live in Nevada. Beautiful sunny day here in West Seattle. I can agree with you on that, Julie. And gorgeous morning in Wedgwood. Loved the poem. Yeah, I thought we needed to have a, I think Kabir was a Sufi, right? We need that for our Rapture talk today. See if anybody else has anything to say. Thank you for being here. A lovely day on the east side, Newcastle. Yes, the poem was uplifting. That's from Charles. Yeah, Sufis are all about rapture. Yeah. And good morning from John from Tacoma, but currently in Reno for work. Yeah, that I lived in Reno for a while. So, and it is a windy city. Okay, well, I don't see any more. Let's see. Oh, no, there is more. Okay. Loving my sunbeam here, swirling mind. Thank you for being, oh, that was Charles. Let's see. John and Jabo. Hello, sweet Sangha from Nina back home in sunny Seattle. Welcome back, Nina. For those of you who don't know Nina, she's also one of the teachers, and you'll be meeting her soon, I hope. Okay, well, I think it's time for the talk then. So let me get that going here. So our topic is rapture today, and this is the talk. Suffering, faith, joy, and now rapture. Coming soon in May, tranquility. This is the sequence of the first five of the 12 spiritual development stages in Transcendent Dependent Arising. And that gives us a map of what can happen when we step off the samsara path, which goes around in circles, and turn in the direction of a path that builds towards full liberation. So far, we've talked about two kinds of joy, which are part of this path of Transcendent Dependent Arising. And that's what we're studying this year, for those of you who are new. Two different Pali words, which is the Buddha's language, are given to these forms of joy. The first, Pamoja, is associated with gladness, For example, when we start out on the path and we feel the happiness of finding a way that we resonate with, that's Pamoja. The second is rapture, or Piti in Pali, which we are exploring this month. And this kind of joy is not as easy to understand for most people as Pamoja. The word rapture and the state of rapture can cause strong reactions in people. We Sunday Sit teachers found that out when we met for our rapture planning meeting last month. I've made titles for each section of my talk, and this one is the rapture, that rapture word. I gotta clear my voice, my throat just a minute. A few weeks ago during my breakout group discussion of rapture, one person made a comment, and it was something like, "Oh, that rapture word." When I first heard about Buddhist rapture, there was a pause inside of me. I didn't think of the Christian form of rapture that many of us think of when we hear the word, the sudden transporting of believers to heaven at the second coming of Christ. I thought, oh, that's what happens in the jhana states. My teachers don't teach the jhanas to us. So as a result, I associated rapture with what was for me the mystique of the jhanas. But I also knew that the jhanas were a form of deep concentration, and that concentration definitely was a very important part of the Eightfold Path leading to the end of suffering and to full liberation. We studied this last year. I heard lots of talks on concentration, but I don't remember hearing, I hadn't remembered hearing any talks on rapture. So joy, okay, concentration, okay, but why rapture? I was puzzled and a little intimidated by rapture. The next section is why rapture. I'm beginning to understand why rapture. I noticed this word in two other key Buddhist teachings. First, in the Seven Factors of Awakening. In the Seven Factors of Awakening, rapture is the fourth factor. First comes mindfulness, then investigation, then energy, and then rapture, followed by tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. The seven factors are a sequence like transcendent dependent arising. Each factor conditions the arising of the next one. So I zeroed in on rapture, and I saw that energy led to rapture and that rapture led to tranquility. I also learned that the seven factors of awakening are divided into energizing factors and calming factors. Rapture, along with investigation and energy, are energizing factors, and tranquility, concentration, and equanimity are calming factors. The first factor, mindfulness, functions to balance all the factors. So the idea of the need for balance between energizing and calming in order to develop mindfulness and awaken makes sense to me. I'm certainly familiar during my meditations with the hindrance of sleepiness on the one hand and restlessness on the other. And meditation involves the body, the mind, and the heart. Our nervous system and energy systems are also involved. And there are definite fluctuations in our nervous system and energy when we meditate. So it was beginning to make sense to me why rapture might fit into my practice. Rapture also pops up in the Buddha's instructions for mindfulness of breathing. These instructions are found in the Anapanasati Sutta. There are 16 of them, gathered into four sets. And the sets mirror the focus of the four foundations of mindfulness, which is the Buddha's other meditation instructions. You may be familiar with these mindfulness groups. They are body, feeling, mind, and wisdom. In the mindfulness of feeling set of Anapanasati instructions, the fifth instruction says, one trains oneself. Sensitive to rapture, I breathe in. Sensitive to rapture, I breathe out. I've been using these mindfulness and breathing instructions in my meditation practice. And practicing breathing in and breathing out. And the very first thing is to be mindful of the sensitivity to the breath, which is part of the body. But when we move into the object focus of feelings, the first instruction, the fifth instruction out of the 16 instructions is to be sensitive to rapture. So that's kind of a leap, it felt to me, to be focusing on the body and then be focusing on rapture. So how does this come about? Well, after one focuses on rapture, it leads to a kind of calmer joy called sukha in Pali. So there's an energizing again and a calming. It seems like the energy of rapture has a balancing relationship with the calming of the body. And the energy and intensity of rapture also has a balancing relationship with the calmer form of joy called sukha. I've learned more about joy and rapture as I've continued to practice with these mindfulness of breathing instructions. And it feels like a fruitful investigation. You or I can ask, is there any degree of joy in my meditation in this moment? If there is, no matter how subtle it may be, linger there for a while. What happens to your meditation when it's present? How does it begin? How does it end? Does it get more intense? Or do you also notice a calmer form of joy? And then we're asked to look at our relationship to the joy in our meditation, whether it be rapture or a calmer kind of joy. Does it support other aspects of our meditation? Do we cling to it? Or do we ignore it? Or do we push it away? So being curious about all forms of joy, including rapture, seems to be what we're being asked to do here. And ultimately, according to the Buddha's teachings, it will lead to joy, many more wisdom and joy. The next section of my talk is called A Lively Discussion. And that's about our Sunday Sit Team planning to teach about rapture this month. I was not the only person who had mixed feelings about the topic and the word. I'll just say there was a lot of reactivity. So I decided to investigate my direct experience with rapture and move away from my relationship with the label. I listened to Joseph Goldstein's talk on rapture, which Judith recommended. And I'll say it's hard to find talks on rapture. Joseph's talk was about rapture as it shows up in the seven factors of awakening. Right away, Joseph said that there are a number of terms associated with rapture, and he was going to use all of them synonymously in his talk. Those words were joy, happiness, delight, pleasure, and rapt interest. For him, these are all ways to conceive of rapture. I think that's a good approach. As a kind of joy, that's what rapture is. And all kinds of joy work together. I'm coming from the perspective that pleasure or joy in general are very important, they're very important in meditation. Different kinds and degrees of joy support meditation in different ways at different times. Some specific qualities are associated with piti, the rapture kind of joy, and that's what we're exploring this month. So that's what I'm going to go forward with. And the quality of rapture, one of the qualities is tireless energy, rapt interest and delight. In addition, Joseph adds that this kind of joy is quite extraordinary. So I wanted to investigate my experience with what I felt was a kind of a degree of rapture that I had earlier in my practice. And so I will talk about it now. This was an experience when I went on a week-long retreat at IMS, Insight Meditation Society, in Barre, Massachusetts. And it wasn't my first week-long retreat, but it was the first time in my 12 years at that time of Buddhist practice that I had flown across the country to do a retreat at the birthplace of all the Insight Meditation in the United States. It was a big deal for me. It was December. And as luck would have it, when I arrived in Barre, I had a cold, which became more severe overnight, and a jet lag that wasn't letting up. The first day was very unpleasant. I couldn't keep myself upright while meditating. I just wanted to sleep, but I wanted to stay awake more. I wanted to benefit from this opportunity, and I didn't know, because I didn't know when I would have another chance to do a retreat at IMS. And for the first 2 days, I was overcome with sloth and torpor. Every meditation was a battleground. I knew this wasn't right effort, but I didn't know what else to do. What I was doing was reciting a mantra, and the mantra was, sit and know you are sitting, and the whole of the Dhamma will be revealed. These words came from Joseph Goldstein's teacher, Munindraji. They contained the mindfulness instructions that I was trying to cultivate, and that was sit and know you are sitting. So I would say to myself, sit and know I am sitting. And then I would just say, knowing I am sitting, knowing I am sitting, trying to stay present. And they also contained my intention, which was to eventually know the whole of the Dhamma. Because sleepiness was a familiar hindrance in my meditation, I had learned to jerk myself back into attention when I recognized what I call la-la land invading my mind. When things didn't make sense, I would come back. Well, when I became aware that things weren't making sense, I would come back into mindfulness. But that state wouldn't last. So for 2 days, it was back and forth all day. A few minutes of knowing I was sitting, and many minutes of La La Land on the verge of dozing off. Then sometime on the third day, something different happened. This happened 8 years ago, so I don't remember all the details. Suddenly, though, I noticed a change in the energy I felt in my body. The first thing I noticed was that I wasn't sleepy anymore. I didn't have to make any effort to stay awake. Then I started noticing waves of very pleasant feelings going through my body. And these waves were strong enough that I thought, I've never felt this, anything like this. This energy is coming from a source outside of me. From that moment, and for the rest of the 5 days of the retreat, the sleepiness disappeared. I was alert for all my meditations. My mind and body were relaxed and happy. When I went to sit, a wave of pleasure would be there to meet me. It was, as Joseph said, extraordinary. Up to this point, meditation for me most of the time seemed to require a lot of effort to stay in the present moment. What was extraordinary for me was that this meditation was happening on its own without my direction. We've already talked about the five levels of rapture this month, from minor rapture to pervading rapture, and I'm not going to explore the levels of rapture in this talk. I haven't had enough experience with rapture to do that, but I do think this was an experience of some degree of rapture, and it definitely helped with the hindrance of sleepiness, and it helped me maintain a continuity of mindfulness that I hadn't achieved before. My next section is called What Could Go Wrong? The drawback was that the joy was so pleasant, and that didn't seem very Buddhist to me. And I asked myself, what about renunciation? What about clinging to the distraction of pleasant things that get in the way of mindfulness? I could feel the pull of the pleasant experience. I started looking forward to the pleasantness of the next sit. And I had to remind myself that my aspiration was to have the whole of the Dhamma be revealed to me. My aspiration was that I would gain wisdom and understanding, not pleasure. Joseph warned that we need to be mindful of our relationship to rapture. He said we should look at how we feel when rapture goes away, for example. Are we equanimous? Or do we ask, what did I do wrong? Rapture leads to awakening in at least three different major Buddhist teachings, so it is to be cultivated. But we will most likely have to also have the challenge of learning how to navigate desire at the same time. Another danger that can accompany rapture relates to its extraordinariness. Some aspects, for me, felt a bit like magic, and I felt myself feeling a little special to have had some of the experiences. Joseph talked about this danger as unwholesome conceit, where we compare and see ourselves as better than, less than, or even equal to another. But it's a double-edged sword, because it's just as easy to judge ourselves as less than. And in the case of rapture, it seems like that can be a problem. This is an example. Joseph told the story about being put in his place by one of the Burmese sayadaws when he was giving his report to the sayadaw about his meditation. He was enthusiastically telling the sayadaw how he had this amazing experience of being lifted off the ground like he was riding on a magic carpet, to which the sayadaw replied, "Well, have you ridden on a magic carpet?" Some of the qualities of rapture may seem extraordinary, but we have to remember that all conditions are impermanent and they don't belong to us, and they won't impress the teacher. Another kind of attachment. I think because of the mixed reactions I and others have had to rapture, I will mention aversion to rapture, which is another form of attachment. The Buddha initially had aversion to rapture before he had his insight that there could be a middle way. Judith talked about this story two Sundays ago. The ascetic path that the Buddha was following required that he renounce sensual pleasure to such an extent that he was on the verge of death by starvation. Then he had a memory from his childhood when he wandered away from the other villagers and his father during a village celebration and secluded himself under a rose apple tree. There he spontaneously entered the first jhana. This memory for the Buddha was very sweet, and he recalled it this way. I recall sitting in the cool shade of the rose apple tree, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities. I entered and remained in the first jhana, which is a state of absorption and concentration. The first jhana, which has the rapture and bliss, he said, born of seclusion, while placing the mind and keeping it connected. Could that be the path to awakening? He asked himself. And then he answered his question. That is the path to awakening. So here's another time when rapture was a very important part of the Buddha's path. But for a moment, the Buddha felt doubt because he had been conditioned by his ascetic path to fear pleasure. And he asked, why am I afraid of that pleasure? For it has nothing to do with sensual pleasures or unskillful qualities. And he concluded that he would not be afraid because that pleasure had nothing to do with sensual pleasure or unskillful qualities. I think this insight of the Buddha is very important, that there is a middle way, and we know his path is called the middle way, and that it is full of very wholesome joy. Bhikkhu Bodhi and Joseph Goldstein emphasize that there's worldly rapture and non-worldly rapture. The joys that are so essential to mindfulness and concentration are non-worldly joys. They are pleasant feelings associated with seclusion, keeping the mind in stillness from the distractions of the world that keep the mind agitated and moving from one thing to the other. It's the happiness felt when the mind is placed on the present moment and the mind, heart, and body are connected, really connected. This includes a rapt interest, the way to clear seeing and wisdom. Rapture is not an end, but it does support the momentum of transcendent dependent arising forward. The delight of rapture is followed by tranquility and sukha, a calm happiness that settles the mind, leading to deep stillness, insight, and ultimately to awakening. The 12 stages of transcendent dependent arising, including rapture, are already here. We don't have to create them or make them happen. We just need to be sensitive to them and allow them to unfold. Samsara is the path of separation, but transcendent dependent arising, including rapture, is the path to connection. I think everybody's back. Almost, not quite. There we go. So, welcome back, everybody. So, what are your thoughts on joy or rapture? Yes, Jennifer.
Well, what came up for me is there's a lot of joy in Sangha. I love hearing people's different perspective. That adds a lot of wisdom in my life. I don't relate to rapture, but I do relate to people expressing exactly who they are and appreciate the deep listening. So to me, that brings tremendous joy of Sangha, listening to your beautiful talk, and then we get to chance to observe on it. So I'm really grateful for that. Thank you. That's joy to me.
Thank you, Jennifer. Judith raised her hand. Where are you, Judith?
I'm right here.
Oh, yeah. You are in your... in your lovely spot.
My lovely spot. Yeah. Well, I would say that what, in response to what Jennifer just said, I mean, that really is almost the classic description of joy in the path, you know, and how it all begins. It's, yeah. Like, oh, wow. I found something here. And the whole idea of refuge, you know, and especially the Sangha as refuge and the joy that that brings. So, yeah. And one thing that I was talking about in the group that just occurred to me listening to your talk, thank you for your talk, by the way, it was lovely, is that when I experienced rapture, and I'm not talking about worldly rapture, you know, attached to, but the things that I described to weeks ago, that when the conditions were just there, suddenly I was in that state of rapture. It wasn't that difficult to let go of it, you know, as it settled into this calmer state of happiness. But when I was first meditating and I would experience things like that, it would be much harder to let go because I thought, oh, that's the way it's supposed to be. That's what I'm supposed to be getting. And so I would find myself striving for it, which of course did not create the conditions for it to arise. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that aspect. Because that was kind of like mystique of rapture, mystique of jhanas, you know, mystique of these kind of extraordinary states that I also felt at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting that raptures in all those situations is followed by calm and tranquility in some form.
Well, it requires, there's so much energy in mm-hmm. rapture that it's almost impossible to sustain, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it's such charge of energy. Yeah.
Thank you. Who else would like to talk about any form of joy, rapture or not? Julie, go ahead.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for the talk. That was really great. Yeah, I just wanted to talk about something that isn't in meditation that I found with practice has become easier for me to access. And it's just a really, really super lovely sense of connectedness with everything. And I, you know, I mean, it may not, you know, check all the boxes for the telltale, you know, PT that one would experience in meditation, but it's just such a beautiful sort of a grounding, you know, you kind of giggle at the fact that you've fret about anything, you know, because it's just such a gift, you know, to be alive. And then when you realize like just the trillions of beings that are, you know, here too, I mean, it can just, I've found for me, it just is just a beautiful, it's a mind state, but it's a whole body state. And so I just wanted to share that. I don't remember how or when I think I probably first experienced it, you know, coming out of a meditation at some point, but I read a book that was talking about how we all we often achieve these insights through meditation. And then we think, oh, got to get to that meditation. What did I do to get to that great insight? Instead of realizing that you can use the insight as a jumping board and, you know, like kind of using kind of that sense of what you felt in the body to sort of mm-hmm. jump off into, oh yeah, that mystery and beauty of being alive, you know, so corny, but also really, really beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you so much. Anyone? Oh, yeah, Nina. Go ahead, Nina.
Hi. Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for your talk. I love the different aspects of joy and rapture that you talked about. And, yeah, I also think that, you know, that the word for us, rapture, can initially be pretty, not so much confusing as to, it's like, okay, so what is this? It's like, so what is this? And, but my experience is, you know, I've been feeling that at times when I feel that I'm in a hindrance or I'm in a situation, that, you know, where I'm maybe making up a story in my head, which is delusion, or I'm feeling some anger about something, and being able to go into those hindrances, into that hindrance, and realizing how false it is, or that there's another way of seeing it. And it's like that, facing my hindrance and realizing a different way, a Dharma way, maybe through metta or deep concentration, or the realization of the other circumstances. That has brought rapture, I believe, in my life. And not always, but the fact that I've been able to experience that is really, going back to the beginning of what we were months ago learning about, has given me the faith to continue on in Sangha and in with the Dharma. And the other thing is, today I've been, what I've felt today was what our fellow Dharma leader Nana had said a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember the number, but I think he said that the Buddha said that there were like 80,000 ways to enlightenment. And for me, that's a comfort, because I don't have to, you know, there's not a specific way that you have to be. And because I have my own personal experience, everyone has their own personal experiences and hindrances and issues and types of suffering. And for me, that's part of the joy, is being able to investigate and experience that. Thanks.
Thank you, Nina. And I'm glad you brought up that joy of having an insight and understanding, because that is definitely one of the ways to even experience rapture that Joseph was talking about. And I'm going to combine, I just want to share a little bit too. I'm going to combine what Jennifer said about the Sangha and Julie, the connection, and what you were saying, that hearing each person, each Sangha person, when people share, it kind of, it opens my heart that they're talking about some new understanding or some wisdom that they have, and I hear it, and there's such a joy in that, and it's a connecting kind of joy, and it's an understanding of the Dhamma, because it keeps on giving, you know, and then we share it with others, so it's so nice. So thank you, everybody who has shared. And would anybody else like to say anything?